When you're so narrow-minded on this idea of success and you're not willing to be flexible on how you get there, you push things to the side that might really need your attention and give you a different version of success. I was in full-blown mania. It got to a point where I was actually in psychosis. I remember my treatment team telling me, "We're going to be honest, Emily, we would not recommend your job for someone with bipolar disorder.
You have to make really decisions sometimes. Success can happen in addition to that, not in spite of it, but sometimes even because of it."
I believe that some of the best things in my life have become true or happened or whatever because of my mental health diagnosis, my disorder. Sometimes we need to redefine what we're after. And that's why Success Rewritten feels so powerful to me. Hey everyone, it's Emily Lomenzo Washkovic, the host of Success Rewritten. Today's interview is going to tell you the backstory on me. What happened in 2018, why I had to be strapped down to a hospital bed and sedated, and what those next few months looked like as I navigated my new normal. I had tons of ideas of what success should be, and all of them were shattered and rebuilt after my mental health episode. Success Rewritten comes from that period. The concept, the conversations I plan to have, they're all rooted in pivot points that I believe all successful people go through. So I'm really happy you're here. I really hope you enjoy the stories, and I want to know what you want to hear more about. So drop a comment below if you have a question for me. Share this episode with someone in your network you think might enjoy it, and please subscribe to the channel so we can continue growing the show. Thanks for listening. Well, everyone, welcome to Success Rewritten, the very first episode. My name is Emily Lomenzo Washkovic. And before I start interviewing other people, I thought maybe you guys should know a little bit about me and why I have the authority to sit behind this mic and hopefully bring some conversations that open up new ideas for you and just a new way to look at your own life and your own achievement and success. So today I am honored and grateful to have my dear friend, Shelby Forsythia. Shelby is a grief coach, a three-time author, and a podcast host of multiple shows. And I knew she would just be the perfect person to walk us through my journey and help us flesh out what this show concept is going to be and make some promises to you guys as our listeners. So Shelby, thank you so much for joining. Can you just tell everyone a little bit about yourself before we dive in?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll keep mine short because I'm not the one being interviewed this time. It's a total turning of the table situation, and I love it. As you said, I'm a grief coach, author, and podcaster, and I have been doing this work for about 10 years, and I love the idea and the concept of Success Rewritten because so much of what I do is work with myself, but also with grieving people who are asking the question, how do I continue working? How do I either own businesses or participate in businesses when loss gets in the way? And people say loss gets in the way, but how do you integrate those things together? How do you bring people who have died or a divorce that you're going through or a diagnosis that you're enduring to the workplace? Because in a lot of ways, there's no way to separate that. Your work informs your personal life. Your personal life informs your work. And I just love this concept, and I'm so thrilled to be here with you. And it's something I've been speaking about and working with for so many years. And I'm just excited to be interviewing you for this first episode.
Well, and I'm excited that you're going to be a guest in just a few weeks. So when everyone wants to hear more of Shelby's story and her pivot moment and all of the work that she's done, you have to subscribe on YouTube or whatever platform you're listening on. And Shelby's episode will be in just a couple of weeks. So Shelby, thank you again for making the time. Maybe I'll just start with giving like my fast facts and then I'll turn it over to you and we can keep our conversation going from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Start at the beginning. Who the heck are you and why should people care?
I love it. It's one of these things. It's like, I love to talk. And so I've been trying to think of how I'm going to succinctly tell who I am to get people who don't know me at all. And I think I'll just start by saying I'm a Midwest millennial. I grew up in Wisconsin. My immediate family is small. I'm the oldest daughter of two. I have a younger brother, but I come from a large family. Both of my parents are one of six siblings. So I grew up with tons of aunts and uncles, cousins. A typical Thanksgiving for us is at least 30 people. So I kind of always grew up in this environment where I was very supported and surrounded. and very fortunate, honestly, to have parents who prioritized me and my brother above everything else. I had a great education growing up. I was able to play multiple sports. I played instruments. And truly, like, reflecting on my growing up time, it was amazing. It was kind of something out of a movie. And not to say that nothing bad ever happened, but the older I got, the more I became aware of the privilege that I have and was born into in many ways. And so that is so much a foundation of who I am. And when I say privilege, I mean, you know, the network, not necessarily always monetary, but it's just that safety net that's always kind of been there and allowed me to leap in life, if you will. The other thing I'll say is I've always been a little worker and grinder. You know, my parents always instilled in us that work was good for us. I babysat all through high school. I worked for a catering company. I waited tables. So we were always working and kind of involved in these businesses. When we were younger, they were small businesses. And as I grew up, you know, my career was very important to me and defined so much of who I am as a person.
Yes, I remember very distinctly overhearing this at your wedding, which I was so happy to attend in January of 2026. The people sitting behind us during the ceremony were asking the typical wedding question of, how do you know the bride and groom? And they were like, oh, Emily hustled and was going around the neighborhood, like passing out flyers for babysitting and pet sitting and all these other things from the time I think that you were 12. And so this sense of not just feeling obligated to work, but wanting to work and seeing it as a core part of your identity. And this being true, I imagine, for so many people who are listening, it really just resonated with me because I started working at 15. I started serving tables. That was the legal age where you could start serving tables in North Carolina. And I was a pianist for a local church, and that was my first job. And I just wanted to work and wanted to feel like I was a part of the world in that flavor and in that way. And it's something I just really, really love about you and your story. And it folds over into how work has played such a big role in your life. So let's go there next and talk about, like, what has your work life looked like through the years, but especially in the most recent ones that have led to the creation of Success Rewritten?
Absolutely. So, you know, college was all about figuring out what I liked or didn't like. And towards the end of college, event planning was it for me. I just loved it. I was a campus event coordinator at UW-Madison, and I thought it was so fun doing all different types of events, working with different types of clients. And so I carried that on after graduating, and I did that for about a year and a half at a smaller UW campus. And then I worked at a hotel for about a year and a half. And that period shaped me so much because I was given a lot of responsibility at a very young age. I was the front office manager for a 200-room hotel. And so I had employees that worked under me. And I had to kind of learn how to show up and interact with different people, how to create systems. And eventually, I just wanted to be in a big city. I didn't want to live in Wisconsin anymore or Madison. And I remember I went to San Francisco to visit some friends, and we're sitting around on a Sunday at a brunch place, and they were all playing this game where you put your phone face down on the center of the table, and the first person who looks at their phone during brunch buys everyone's brunch. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I normally not only work on a Sunday, but I do not have enough money to buy brunch for all these people. And that was when I thought, I got to get to a big city. If I want to do something, I got to get to a big city. So I took the first job I got. That week I got home, I applied to every tech company I knew was in San Francisco. I got offered a job at Yelp in the sales department. And I just have to say, it was such a young 20s thing to do. They were not going to pay me very much money. I was about to pay an exorbitant amount in rent, but I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted to get there and do it. And my parents, you know, they gave me the positive, like, you're going to do great, but also a little question of, like, does this make sense? Is this going to work? And I remember that first day I got to Yelp, there was 50 of us new employees who were going to sell local ads to small businesses. And I was the only one that was living in San Francisco. Everyone else was, like, taking the train for an hour in from their aunt's house because the city is so expensive. And so I quickly realized, okay, I can't keep this job very long if I want to stay here. I like what I'm doing, but I got to figure out if I want to live in San Francisco, I got to make some money. And so I was working in Yelp. I was just showing up every day, trying to do my best so that other opportunities might open up for me. And about a year and a half into working at Yelp, this very unique role opened up. At the time, it was called the Business Outreach Team. They were a three-person team, and they were looking to add one additional person. And it was very luxurious role. You got to fly around the country and speak at conferences and conventions. And it just sounded amazing to me, getting on stage and talking to business owners and not being on the phone anymore, actually being in person with these small business owners. And I got the job and I was so excited, Shelby, because I was like, for one, now I can stay in this city. I'm thinking, this is great. I have a real job now, you know, a big girl job. But it was also perfect for my personality. Our whole job was helping business owners with the free tools available to make the most of Yelp. So I wasn't selling advertising. I had no motivation to get these people to do anything other than understand how it could help their business on a free level. And it was great for me because I was dealing with people that were so frustrated or maybe misinformed, or they felt completely out of control as a business owner or operator. You know, people are saying things about them and they feel like that they don't have any say in the matter, but they really did. They have autonomy and things that they can do. And so I loved that job. It was amazing. And as the team evolved, we started to do community building for business owners. And that's how I met Shelby. I hosted all of these events for local business owners. And honestly, Shelby, I should just stop talking for a minute. Like, tell me what you remember. What was my job from your perspective when we met? Like, what did I do?
That's so funny. I have had my grief business since 2016, but I've always done a little bit of something else on the side to keep my brain entertained. And I was serving tables and on the marketing team for a white tablecloth restaurant in downtown Chicago. And you had come into the Yelp Chicago offices and were talking to small businesses about how to use these free tools and are you interested in learning how to respond to reviews. And as the person who is responding to all the reviews, I bought what you were selling, not necessarily literally with money, but I was like, I understand as a small business owner myself, the power of reviews to be not as a forum for people to complain about everything they hate about you, but as a place for people to genuinely give feedback, not just about complaints or things that you can improve, but things that they're obsessed with. And for years and years at the restaurant I was working for, we would use reviews to improve the physical space. So like adding pads to the bottom of chairs to keep them from squeaking or to change how we offer service on busy holidays like Valentine's Day or Thanksgiving or Easter, things like that. And we really used reviews as opportunities to bring people into the business even more deeply. And so I already was sold on the idea of Yelp as a platform for connecting people with the audiences and the customers that they're trying to serve. And so you and I were like, wait a minute, this is not going to be a sales interaction. It's going to be a, like, how do we get this message out to the masses? And so we hosted multiple events together and we're on panels together.
Well, yeah, you were like the prime example of like how to use and maximize the tools. So I remember when I met you and I saw what you were doing on the business page and how you were responding, I was like, oh my gosh, not only did I want to be your friend, like we became friends very quickly, but I was like, oh my gosh, I got to put this person on panels. Like I knew that the way you were helping this restaurateur and just your whole mentality and mindset around engaging with clients and customers online, you were like the ideal example. And so, yeah, that brought us together. Those were the fun days. And then the pandemic hit like it did for everyone, you know, and totally changed my career at Yelp. I basically became the virtual host of all small business education and resources, and we would do digital events. But we also decided to launch a podcast, and the pandemic is really the whole reason. I mean, Yelp had wanted to have a podcast for ages, but had never done it because all the misconceptions, like we have to hire a whole team and, you know, all these things that when you don't know about an industry, you don't know what it would take to get started. But with the pandemic, it was like, okay, we've got some downtime. We met with Entrepreneur Magazine because the editor-in-chief, Jason Pfeiffer, had interviewed this business owner that I would call like a Yelp all-star. He was one of those, he did all the right things. And so they had him on a show just because like he was an amazing business owner and they had met him and wanted to feature his success. But Yelp was kind of his whole platform for how he went from a side hustle to an actual business with employees. And Jason, the editor-in-chief, talking to this guy, thought, oh, wow, I think Yelp has this unique advantage to make a show that helps business owners by talking to business owners and talking to consumers. Like, what makes a consumer tick? What makes you want to write a review? What makes you want to come back? And he basically told us, you have the time, you have the resources, just give it a try. Like, you've been doing interviews in person, why not have a podcast? You know how to do it. And that really cracked everything wide open. And you were already podcasting at the time. I remember coming to you like, okay, we're going to do this. I think you and I recorded one of the first Behind the Review episodes with like Yeti mics in the office, right? We were like, this was at the time of podcasting when not only was it like so audio driven, video wasn't even a huge thing back then. And I was just scrappy. I was trying to figure it out on my own. And we were doing pretty well. I mean, the show was very successful. By last year, we had produced over 200 episodes, over 1.6 million downloads. And I loved it. I mean, I got to talk to hundreds of small business owners. I got to talk to customers all over the country. And it was a really fun and cool experience. Oh, Shelby, it's like weird for me to think about that now. And then, yeah, it all changed really fast.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And the pandemic absolutely moved so much of not just how like people put their lives online, but how businesses educated themselves and each other as well. And something I loved about Behind the Review as a podcast specifically is not just the conversations with business owners, but especially in some of the earlier episodes, you were talking to customers who'd left reviews. And again, to your point, why they left reviews, what prompted them to leave reviews, what made businesses feel more special to them or more significant. And that all of that is such a learning moment. And you covered such a variety of industries. So we've been talking a lot on this podcast about customer facing or service industry businesses, like hospitality, things like hotels and restaurants. But you also interviewed people like florists and people like locksmiths and pet grooming centers and just like all of these different places that aren't necessarily always customer facing or out in the world that you would expect maybe like a retail storefront to be. And so it really was like, I'm envisioning like a buffet platter of business information from different sectors and different types and different ages of businesses too. Businesses that had been around for 80 years to businesses that had just been open for 2 or maybe even 6 months. It was very, very cool. Yes. And I know that you switched to video in Behind the Review, and that was part of its evolution. And then recently it evolved again.
Yeah. And honestly, I kind of tailed off there when I was explaining the show concept originally for Behind the Review, but it started with those separate interviews, right? I would talk to a reviewer, I would send that to the business, they would listen, I'd talk to the business, and then we would script an episode together. And it was awesome. I mean, it gave you the best sound bites of all the conversations. But when video started to become huge and podcasting on YouTube started becoming so popular, our show concept was not easily translatable. Like, I was doing 20 to 30 minute interviews and then cutting it down to only maybe 10 minutes of what they said. And so figuring out how to splice and dice that for YouTube, it just was not going to be a fit. And so we started working with an external agency that was an expert in podcasting and video podcasting specifically. And in 2025, we morphed the show quite a bit to be a one-to-one interview show. Sometimes I would still have two guests. So maybe it would be like husband and wife owners. But ultimately, the conversation was start to finish, like we're having an open dialogue conversation. And it was video forward. And something that was really cool about that evolution was we started featuring bigger names. And I love the small independent businesses, and we will never turn away from those stories. But it is really cool to talk to the CEO of a multi-hundred location business and learn about that. And we also got to meet some famous people. Like, I interviewed the Property Brothers and Bobby Burke. And in that journey, what I learned and loved so much is podcasting has become this medium where you can have incredible conversations with people all around the country, all around the world, because all we have to do is sit in our home and dial into a video call rather than having to necessarily be in person. And so switching to video was a new challenge for me. It was a whole new learning process for how to optimize for YouTube, but it also opened up my mind to what's possible in terms of a set of guests and how deep conversations can go and how far they can reach, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And just indicative of how many pivots that you as a podcaster were able to make through the months and the years of podcasting and through the pandemic too.
Well, and it's so important, no matter what your business or industry is, to stay up on what's changing. And we weren't always on the cutting edge of things, but if we would see things changing in the industry, we would want to learn why and see if that was a fit for us. And I think for many entrepreneurs and small business owners, that's so important because, you know, maybe before you started, you researched, right? You looked at other businesses in the industry or in other areas. But if you get started with your own thing and then you stop paying attention to what else is going on, that's kind of how you can get stale, no matter what industry you're in. And so I learned that many times in my journey at Yelp, but I also learned that through the small business owners and entrepreneurs I talked to. And entrepreneurs are so resilient. I mean, these stories that I've heard over the years, they all are so similar in many ways because the persona of an entrepreneur can be so similar, but all of them overcame things that they never thought they would even have to climb at one point.
Absolutely. There's a very fitting quote that I use often in grief work that works just as well here. And I think it's from somebody who worked in the government. I do not know who this person was, but there was a very famous quote where he was talking about a bill that was passing or some kind of how you can't predict the future. And he said, there are known knowns. There are things you know that you know. There are unknown knowns, things that you know that you don't know, but then there are unknown unknowns, things that you don't know that you don't know and that you will never see coming. And you try to design your life or build a business or even appear on a podcast with all these things in mind. But then sometimes there are these unknown unknowns that step in and force you to rearrange everything. And there's a Jewish proverb that says, we plan, God laughs. But it's this sense of like, you try your best to plan the thing together. You figure out who you are in the midst of it. And then something else happens. And then you rebuild again and again and again, whether that's a grief event, whether that's a pandemic, whether that's a podcast pivot, whether that's changing media and technology. And it just goes to show that resilience is so embedded in who we need to be in order to be in the workplace.
Absolutely. And I think some of the most resilient and successful people went through this like moment or pivot point where they were 1,000,000% questioning if there was going to be positive light on the other side and were able to reflect on that moment and say, in hindsight, in the future, that was the moment that things got better in the long run. And I'm not saying that feeling is always immediate. I mean, it could be a year plus between when something happens and when you're starting to feel like you're on the other side. But I do think that these hard moments that entrepreneurs go through always seem to define new opportunity, and especially that unknown unknown, that can be true in the good sense as well. And so sometimes these moments that happen that cause you to alter the root of everything, they take you to a new place that you weren't even planning to go. And I've seen that happen with so many entrepreneurs. They start thinking their business is serving one audience or one need, and they end up with a completely different primary goal for their business.
Yes. And this is where I want to start taking it personal with you of like, tell us about your own significant pivot points that have led you to, eventually we'll get there, the formation of this podcast, because you're not just somebody who's been podcasting for years or working with businesses for years. You are a person who has also had pivot points that inform what the rest of the show is going to be.
Yeah. So, you know, I opened by talking about my life and my background and journey as so like positive and great because it truly was. And growing up, there weren't really any signs of, you know, me having challenges or struggles, whether that was family, friends, school, like it was all good. And in 2018, so I'd been at Yelp for about 4 years at this point, I was living back in Wisconsin. I had just moved back and work was very, very busy. I mean, for a couple of years, I had been working excessively, traveling a lot for work, not really being mindful or managing my time at all, just being grateful that I had energy to go, go, go all the time. And I used to say things like, yeah, I'll prioritize my mental health, you know, like when I have some more free time. Or I would even talk about like, oh, I would love to see a therapist someday. But I would never do it because I was okay. Like there was nothing wrong necessarily. And then in October of 2018, I was in the middle of a huge work project. We were trying to launch Yelp for Business on Instagram. So just conceptualizing, like, what should this account look like? What are we going to hit on? And I also got a puppy. So this is all like happening at the same time. And within about 5 or 6 days of getting my puppy, I was in full-blown mania. If you're not sure what mania is, or you've never heard of someone being manic, it's essentially an elevated mood state where your thoughts are racing, your body in many cases is functioning on what I would call fumes. So, you know, maybe you're like shaky, but you're still going a mile a minute. You don't feel tired. And I knew a little bit about what mania was because I had a family member that had been experiencing some of these types of mental health episodes, but I didn't know as it was happening to me what it was. I just knew I wasn't sleeping. These ideas were coming out of me like crazy. And then finally, it got to a point where I was actually in psychosis. So, you know, this is day 6 of sleeping maybe 2 hours at a time. I'm pacing around my apartment, telling my then boyfriend, I just need to take a shower and sleep. I was so tired. I remember feeling so tired. And I was naked, walking around my apartment, just pacing, saying, I need to shower and sleep. But I wasn't doing it. I was like doing other things. And he was trying to talk to me and I wasn't really like responding at that point. So he called my parents. He was so scared. He had no idea what was happening. And when my parents came down to my apartment, I was still like pacing naked. And the reason I tell that story to people is because if you've never seen someone in full-blown mania or psychosis, you maybe can't understand how detached they are from reality. But for me, at the time I was, I think, 27, I can't think of something much more embarrassing than my dad seeing me naked. Like, I would have never continued to walk around my apartment naked if I was coherent to the fact that my dad was there. And all I really remember from that particular night was my parents getting some clothing on me. Barely, like, I was wearing Tony shorts, so they were big, and an open face sweater. So like I was still relatively naked. They got me into their car and they're calling people trying to figure out where to go, where to take me. They had no idea what to do. I mean, how would you know if you've never been in this situation? And luckily a family friend answered and said, just get to the emergency room and they will help you. And they took me to the emergency room. I sometimes like to preface these types of stories by saying, like, you know, I'm a white woman. So I feel like that was a very safe scenario. They showed up and we just immediately got help. And I'm not saying like, consider that before you go to a hospital. But I do think of that when I think of mental health episodes before you call 911, as an example. We can cover that later. But my point here in this story is I was at a stage where the security officers could tell, like, my parents were struggling to get me into the emergency room. So they had to help physically bring me in. And at that point, I now am saying things to the facility people, like nurses and whoever. I'm pretending like I'm an actor doing a simulation, like a training for them. And some of them are confused, like, what is happening? But that's where my brain was going. Like, I realize now I'm in an emergency room. I don't want to be the patient. So now my brain has like switched into this mode of trying to convince these people I'm there to help them. And within about 5 minutes, one of the nurses said, stop listening to her. And then they had to strap me down and sedate me. They had to make me go to sleep so that they could actually treat me. And I was sedated for about 12 hours. during that period, my parents called my work and enacted medical leave. They got a bed for me at a very nice mental health, behavioral health hospital here in Wisconsin called Rogers. And by the time I woke up, everything was pretty much taken care of for me. I was taken in an ambulance to this behavioral health hospital, and I had a meeting with a doctor. He told me that I had bipolar disorder, and then he gave me medication to sleep for another 20, 24 hours before I then continued on to do treatment. So, you know, this mental health episode came out of nowhere in many senses. But once I was hospitalized, it was very clear what my path and journey and diagnosis was. And so I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I was in inpatient treatment for a week. I did outpatient treatment for about 7 weeks, and I was on medical leave for about 3 months total before going back to work in the new year.
This is a point in the story. There are elements of this that even I haven't heard before, and we've been friends for almost a decade now. But this is a point where I want to like pause and remind people who are listening that I think a lot of people assume that the changes that are made in life and business come from negative life events, negative, heavy air quotes. Someone dies, a divorce happens, you get diagnosed with something. But also a lot of times changes that we make in life and business come from things that society would perceive as happy. Working on a new project, getting promoted on some level, having babies, getting a dog, getting married. Like so many times, the pivot points in our lives and businesses are not just things that crash us down or bring us to our knees, but they're also things like, I just got a dog. I just got a dog. That's a very human, happy, societally positive thing to have and to want and to pursue. And then suddenly I'm hospitalized. Did not realize how all those cards were stacking up. And obviously, you've spoken in the past how like genetics play a part and environment plays a part and habits and routines play a part. And we'll get into how work plays a part. But just a pause point for how so often the ways we pivot in life and business and the things that take us out or take us down or make us rethink our life, the unknown unknowns, are often sparked by things that society would see as good.
Absolutely. And I'm a firm believer that I've always had bipolar disorder. I believe it's something I was genetically born with. And I just happened to have this episode that hospitalized me and made me aware of it later in life. And it was enacted or like, you know, started essentially because of these positive things. And I look back on my past from before I knew that I had bipolar disorder. And honestly, there was a lot of times that I would call minor episodes or like blips on the radar where nothing bad happened. And so that's why it wasn't maybe caught or called to be concerning. And I truly believe like moving to San Francisco, that was hypomania for sure. Like deciding within a week that I could go from paying $450 in rent to paying, you know, $1,650, but making the same amount of money. Like, that's not sound judgment. But at the same time, that like risk and like confidence in myself and like, I'll figure it out in the long run. That's a personality trait that I think is me. I'm not saying that's bipolar disorder, but I think that combination of things is what so many people don't understand about mental health. Like, I believe that some of the best things in my life have become true or happened or whatever because of my mental health diagnosis, my disorder, who I am as a person. And at the same time, it's brought me challenges, right? And that point in 2018, the hospitalization and diagnosis, that was a huge pivot point because I didn't realize how poorly I was taking care of myself before I got this diagnosis. And that's mental health disorder or not, right? I was not sleeping well. I was not doing a lot of different things that everyone should do, whether they're trying to manage a mental health diagnosis or not. And so I needed this really bad thing to make me take the time to prioritize and take care of myself. But you're so right that for many people, it's not always this horrible thing that causes everything to halt. It can be great positive things too.
Yeah. And I want to dig into that time period of your life where everything was changing and kind of who you knew yourself to be in some level was falling out from underneath you. There's what I imagine like a reprioritization or re-ranking of where everything falls in your life, including what work looked like.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is I used to sleep like 5 to 6 hours a night. And I thought that was like good. I didn't feel tired. So I was like, cool. I'm so lucky. That's all I need. False. No one needs that little. Like everyone needs more. And so the first thing that I was trying to wrap my head around is like, how am I going to sleep 3 more hours every day and still like get stuff done? That just, it was not computing to me, but I knew that I was going to have to try to figure that out. The other big thing that I had to realize or work through was, I mean, I'll tell you, Shelby, those first few days being inpatient, I was like, oh, okay, I know my diagnosis now. Okay, I'm going to take medicine. I'm good. I'll just go back to work. And my doctor's like, no, you know, like you're not going back to work. And I remember thinking, but I can't miss all this stuff. Like I have events, I have things I'm hosting, blah, blah, blah. Let me just tell you, I worked for a corporation. So like, yes, people naturally filled in because that's what happens. But even if you own your own business, whatever the case may be, you could get hit by a bus today and you're not showing up at work. Okay. So sometimes we think or believe all of these things are way more important than taking care of ourselves. And if you keep putting everything above that, that might come knocking at your door. And I'm not saying that you're going to have a manic episode, but like in my case, I was doing all these things that I thought were more important. And anytime there was a work thing that I could be working on or a trip that I wanted to go on because it was a good opportunity for speaking, I was saying yes to everything. And so that feeling of I have always more in my tank to keep going more, I knew that that was going to change. Like taking the medication alone was kind of tampering some of that energy flow, especially in the beginning. I mean, I remember being so like groggy as I was adjusting to everything. And that's why you can't go back to work right away. Like I needed to be in treatment because my brain was adjusting to this new normal. But all I kept thinking during medical leave was, there's no way I'm going to be good at my job anymore. I was convinced. And I remember my treatment team telling me, like, we're going to be honest, Emily, we would not recommend your job for someone with bipolar disorder. You travel between time zones for work. You work nights, sometimes weekends. Like, it's not good structure and stability for someone with bipolar disorder. However, you've been doing it for so long and you enjoy it. So rather than say, find a different career, let's start by saying, these are some things you're going to have to do differently when you go back to work. And if you're good at your job and you can keep doing it, then you keep doing it. And if, you know, in 6, 9, 12 months, it doesn't feel like it's working, then maybe you have to find something else. And those things were like, no getting on my email before 9. So in the morning, waking up and doing things, functioning, starting my day before I look at whatever work thing is going to pull me into the rabbit hole. I also had to stop working at like 5:30 or 6. So really being on myself about sending that last email or getting out of that last meeting and not opening my computer till the next day and eliminating multitasking. Those were the three biggest things that I was told like I needed to do right away. And the multitasking thing, I mean, that was like a knife to my heart. I'm like, I'm the best multitasker. What do you mean no multitasking? You know, like I'm good. I'm so good at that. No, none of us are good at it. And what I really learned is when I was in a meeting and responding to a Slack or an email or whatever, I was missing something or, you know, disengaged from what was happening in there. I was not successfully doing these two things at once. And when you multitask a lot, your brain has unclosed loops. So if you're ever like at the end of the day, you know, driving home or like, do you ever get in the shower where you're like, oh, thank God I remembered that. Well, that's because we both have ADHD, but For people who multitask, sometimes that is like the negative side effect. You're doing so much that your brain doesn't remember closing the loop on certain projects. And it's almost like tabs being open in your brain. And so I went back to work and I remember, Shelby, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this for a couple months and I'm going to be told like, you're going to have to find something else. And within probably 6 weeks, I actually was like, wow, I'm like better at my job. Like I'm like real good. I'm really good. And the other thing, Shelby, that I realized, so many of the expectations that I had for how quickly to get back to people or when to be available or whatever, they were my own. I made them. I created all of the constraints that were holding me. And I think entrepreneurs do that too. I think when you, how do I want to say this? When you're so narrow-minded on this idea of success and you're not willing to be flexible on how you get there, I think sometimes you push things to the side that might really need your attention and give you a different version of success. And so for me, it was about doing these things and having to wait to see the positive return, right? Because in the beginning, you don't trust it. And that's anyone. Like if you're going to try to sleep 2 extra hours a night, there's no way in the beginning you're going to believe that that's going to make you feel better. You have to feel it. You have to go through a week of waking up in the morning and having that cognitive difference to want to invest to keep sleeping 2 more hours, you know? And so I had to stop responding at 5:30 and not respond again till 9 and multiple times realize nothing happened in that period that needed my attention. And then it was like I had the permission slip to not respond to emails after 6 anymore because no one was expecting that out of me. That was me thinking I needed to do that to be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes so much sense. But not seeing the proof is hard. Not seeing the proof is hard.
Well, and you know, with the clients you work with, it's like change doesn't feel good to us, especially if it's not on our terms. And so when stuff is happening that's out of our control, we want control. That's human nature, right? We try to control other stuff if we're out of control. And I think with entrepreneurship, sometimes giving up some of that control or asking for help is truly the way forward. And you know, I had all of these support systems, like great insurance, a reliable job, and that helped me. But also being open about what I was going through and asking for help is what truly supported me all the way through. And I have never disclosed my mental health stuff and not had people then open and want to share something that they're going through, whether it's mental health or not. I think I've learned that by being raw and authentic, it's helped other people feel safe and comfortable. And no matter what we're all going through, you have something. Everyone has their own thing, and maybe the level or the dimension of it is different. But we don't talk about that enough. And we sometimes suffer silently with all sorts of things. And my journey always seemed to get better the more that I shared or talked about it.
Yeah. And that's something that comes with seeing the proof of it too, because it can be really stressful or anxiety inducing at first, being like, how much of this do I put on the table? How much of this do I like open up for other people to see and to view? And so it sounds like your support system, all of it, both logistically, but also like humanly on a human level, was something that showed you again and again, you will not be dropped. You will be held in this experience that you're having.
Yes. And I also think that sometimes we need to redefine what we're going for or what we're after. And that's why Success Rewritten feels so powerful to me. There's so many entrepreneurs or leaders or successful people that I've met in my life who tell you that they redefined what the end goal was so many times along the journey. And oftentimes to get to a different result that was better than what they ever envisioned when they started or launched. And I think that's what happened to me. My mental health pivot taught me that it's not a bad thing to put myself first and make sure I'm taking care of my body physically and emotionally. And having the freedom to prioritize yourself gives you what you need sometimes to just walk through the world more successfully, you know? And it's as little for me as knowing I can cancel or reschedule anything. And that might sound crazy to people, but when you were at work one day on a Tuesday and on Wednesday you're in a mental health hospital, you never again think that anything needs to happen right now. Like, if you wake up and today is not the day for that call or that whatever, it's okay to change or cancel. And I think a lot of people sometimes need that little permission slip to give themselves a moment. And I know that you will feel better after you do that. And it could be little or it could be long, right? Like, this permission slip you're working through could be a long journey, but it could be as simple as canceling one day of meetings, going to the movies, and turning your phone off for 2 hours. Like, that really works for me sometimes. And the next day I am way better than before.
Yes, absolutely. And a more grief-related note or grief-related level, I experienced this in my own work and have had to give myself permission slips to grieve new losses as a grief coach who helps people through their grief. And there's kind of this, like, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, as a grief coach, do I have permission to stop or slow my work of helping people through grief because I myself am grieving? And it has been such a weird, like the Spider-Man meme where they're both pointing at each other situation. And something that's really helped has been to put myself in the shoes of the audience or the customers that I'm serving, who are fellow grievers. And I would hate as a grieving person to know that someone I was working with was denying themselves rest or time or space to process or a session with a therapist or anything else that they may need at my expense. Like, that would feel terrible as a consumer or as an audience member. And we won't go into this today. We'll talk about this more in our interview and we'll get into success rewritten and when that's coming up. But my best friend died suddenly from COVID in 2022. And I was in the middle of like year two of a book promotion tour and everything came grinding to a halt when she died. And I put an out of office on my email that basically said, my friend died. I have no idea when I'm going to be back. Canceled everything on my calendar and just grieved for months and months and months before I even felt like I could return to talking about and teaching about grief, other than cataloging and documenting the experience that I was having and then sharing only what felt comfortable to share. That was an experience that taught me that, like, I'm the person running the business. And if I am not running or functioning at any sort of level, then something needs to change. And oftentimes the permission slip looks like asking, what would my clients or my students or my audience want for me? Because usually that it's they want the best for you because they enjoy what you bring to the world and they appreciate you as a person who can bring that to them. All that to say, I want to bring us to current day, 2025, 2026. You experienced yet another pivot in your life and your world, and this has opened a door to success rewritten. Tell us that story.
So November 10th, 2025, ironically, my 11-year anniversary at Yelp, I was to the day, Shelby. That's just the universe telling me that it was going to be okay. But that was a little freaky that it was to the day. It was a Monday. I get up in the morning. I think it's a regular day. And then I see a meeting on my calendar from my director. And to get a same-day invite felt a little off to me. And then I started hearing some rumblings from other people that, oh, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe Yelp is going to do some layoffs. I was fortunate to have a therapy appointment before this set call. So I was able to think about this potential of, like, I might be losing my stability and my job. And that was weird, even that I had a little bit of a tip off to be able to process it before I was told, because so many people who are laid off or let go, which is very common right now, it is a complete shock. So it was a shock to me that day. But when I hopped into that call with my director and HR appeared, I already knew what was going on. And so I was laid off along with the rest of the small business content team. Very sad, very surprising. And at first, I was honestly shocked that I wasn't offered a different role at the company. You know, I had been there so long. I had done so many different things in my time there. But by about Wednesday of that week, I really felt like it was all the way it was supposed to be. Because if I had been offered another job at Yelp, I would have taken it on Monday just out of fear of not being employed and wanting stability. But I know that I loved what I did and I wasn't going to get a chance to keep doing that there. So I had to be okay with that chapter ending. I took November and December to just kind of think about what I loved about my job, think about what I didn't like about it, and really just dream about what I can do now that I have kind of free time, open space, and a lot of possibilities. I really, really, really did not want to stop podcasting. I mean, even just sitting in my studio that's been redone last year for video, I love this. I love talking to people and I love peeling the onion back on what has made them who they are. And so I really wanted to keep doing that, but in a way that was a little bit more authentic to my journey and my story and talks about entrepreneurship. And it felt so fitting because my network is full of entrepreneurs, but also now I'm going through this entrepreneurial journey myself. You know, I've officially decided that I'm not pursuing full-time work right now. I'm not looking for jobs at companies. I'm really focused on launching this show, Success Rewritten, and helping the podcast community at large, no matter what you do in the industry, learn how to better repurpose your content, because that is like what I love about podcasting. It's the fact that I get to be human and have a dialogue, but then afterwards extract so much goodness and advice and tips. And I think a lot of people have great podcasting conversations, but they don't repurpose those amazing takeaways. And so I not only want to elevate voices and stories on my own show, but I want to help other people who have been podcasting or are passionate about it to use that medium as a way to reach more people and create more assets for people to connect with them.
So it sounds like this most recent pivot has provided you with like the perfect opportunity to bring this next thing to life.
I never would have left Yelp to start my own thing. The stability was so important to me, especially, you know, insurance to take my mental health medications, all of those things that you think about when you're being practical. But when I got that freedom and that permission slip to say, well, you're not choosing to end this very reliable career. It's been ended for you. So what do you want to do going forward? It felt to me like a chance to bet on myself. And also, I have this feeling like deep inside of me that there are still so many people afraid to share the hard times that they've gone through. But when they hear other people, they not only feel empowered for what's possible for themselves, but they feel better about what they've already gone through. And so I want people to realize the strength that's already in their own story. You know, maybe you have gone through things that you don't talk about because they're the hardest parts of your life. And that's okay. I'm not saying that everyone needs to come on my show and, you know, reveal the worst day and the worst thing that's ever happened to them. But I do think that so many of us shut those things away. And if we can reflect on how they maybe brought us to a current place or a positive place beyond that moment, that's so validating to your own journey. And I think it opens up what you see as your possibilities going forward. And so I know that I know people with these stories, but I also know that by sitting down and having a comfortable space, sometimes you reflect on that in the moment. I've had many times where I'm talking to a guest and it makes me shift my own perspective on something that happened to me. And your work is such a prime example. I now think of grief so differently. It's not just the loss of someone important to you. You can grieve in so many ways for so many things. And that is empowering to me to really look at my life and have language to better understand and reflect on these moments that ultimately do make me who I am.
Yeah. And this invites me to like what I giggly refer to as the rapid fire section of our interview in 1 minute or less. What types of guests are coming on this show and what guarantees will you make of what the show is or will be for people? If I am listening, what should I expect to take away?
Yep. The guests are going to be leaders, builders, founders, entrepreneurs, certainly, but also athletes, executives. I believe that people are all achieving something in their own realm that's worth celebrating. And so I want to highlight successful voices that can give you insights to how they got to what you see as success in the parts that didn't really feel successful to them. And the promise that I give everyone for every episode is you will hear successful people reflect on moments that felt like a setback. And you will also hear strategic advice for little things that you could change in your life to do things differently. You might not take something from every guest that you're going to implement, but I know that the way they reflect on changes they've made will give you the permission slip to prioritize yourself in maybe just a little way until you listen to the next episode.
I love that. Or to see the hard stuff that you've been through without a fog or a mask or a filter of shame over it. There is no shameful chapter of your life. There is no shameful chapter of your business. And that is just over and over again what I hear from you, what people will take away. It's not the toxic positivity culture of like, we had a hard thing happen and then we grew from it. Nothing bad ever happened again, which is so much of what society sort of shops around in our direction as business owners. But it's like, hard things happen. You have to change course. You have to make really shitty decisions sometimes. And also, success can happen in addition to that, not in spite of it, but sometimes even because of it. And that sounds like the guarantee of success rewritten. I am so excited for this podcast. Please, as we close out this interview, anything else you want to say, but also where can people find the show? How can they subscribe? How can they stay in touch with you? How do they get every single story that's going to be coming over the mic?
Yes, please. Success Rewritten on any audio platform. Like, subscribe. There's the channel on YouTube. So Success Rewritten. And then we'll also have our website. So Google Success Rewritten, anywhere you can find it, like and subscribe, but truly interact with me. I would love to know if you have a guest you think we should have on, if you want to be on, if you have something that you're struggling with. And I know not all of our episodes are going to be mental health focused, but since that's my journey, I really want people to know if you want to talk about mental health, you can talk with me. I have Bipolar Brought Balance, which is my entire mental health advocacy account and blog. And so if there's more that you want to dig into on the mental health side or bipolar or schizophrenia, any of those more intense mental health diagnoses, I love chatting about that stuff. And the last thing I'll say is you really, really, really need to subscribe everywhere because of all the amazing guests. So Shelby is going to be on in just a couple of weeks, but I'm also going to link all of your stuff in this show note episode as well.
Beautiful. Emily, thank you so much for coming on your own show to tell your story.
Thank you for interviewing me.
I love it. I cannot wait for this podcast, this series, this, I'm trying to come up with words right now, but for this like concept to be in the world, it's something that so many of us need right now.
Thank you. Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on this first episode of Success Rewritten. I hope it was enjoyable. Comment below if you have questions or reach out to me directly, emily@successrewrittenshow.com. You can also subscribe to this YouTube channel and follow the show on any listening platform that you use. It really helps us spread the word. Also, rate and review and let us know if you have any feedback. You can reach me directly, emily@successrewrittenshow.com, or go to the show's website, successrewrittenshow.com. We'll see you on the next one.